And good morning. You are listening to Focus 580. It's 11:06. My name is Les Schulte. I'm filling in for David Inge this morning. And during the second hour of Focus, our guest is Dr. James Farron. Dr. Farron is an optometrist at Carl Clinic. And Dr. Farron, thanks for being with us this morning.
Truly a pleasure, Les.
And if you have a question for Dr. Farron about eye care, you can call our numbers within the 217 area code. The number is 333-9455, and outside the 217 area code, 800-222-9455. And we were just chatting a little bit before we came on the air here. And just one question in general. I was just thinking about this, kind of preparing a little bit for the show, and I think everybody I know has some kind of corrective vision. Will we all have some sort of vision correction at some point in our life?
Without a doubt, yes. Yeah, if we're all honest with ourselves. Many people, when they're younger, they develop a vision correction often when they're what we call nearsighted or myopic, where they can't see far away. But even the person who has the hawk eye, the eagle eye, as they move toward 40, and particularly as they move past 40, there's a change in the flexibility of the eye, where their distance may remain relatively static, but they no longer have the ability to see up close. And consequently, someone who's never had a correction starts to need reading glasses, and of course, someone who has a correction will need bifocals. And of course, then also the contact lens wear even creates a little bit more of a difficulty with that transfer from overall vision to that dichotomy between near and far.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, I see we have a call on line one already, so let's go to line one from I-57, apparently you're in your car. Well, good morning this morning.
Yes, this is Barbara. And, Doctor, I wanted to ask you, do you recommend taking an eye vitamin? I'm like 60, and I do not wear glasses. I once in a while wear a Walmart glass to read a contract, but that's it. And I will listen on the radio. And also, could I get it over the counter? Thank you.
Vitamins, there's still some level of disagreement on vitamins. I think it's a good idea, at least a multivitamin, just a vitamin supplement. There are what they call eye vitamins. Often if you look at the content of the package, often it somewhat approximates what are some of the contents of regular vitamins. I think if a person also has had a family history of macular degeneration, it's a great idea. Some of the vitamins that seem to be recommended, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, lutein. So I think it's a good idea, and no, you do not need a prescription for that.
Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about health in general, and you were just had mentioned a good healthy diet is probably good for eye care too, correct?
Frequently that question comes up. But yeah, I think if you were chatting with your general physician, a healthy diet, obviously exercise, watching fat content, weight. What else is new? But smoking is not a good thing for eyes, along mm-hmm. with anything else. Yeah, increased vegetable and fruit consumption. So yeah, I don't think there's a dramatic difference. Healthy lifestyle is a healthy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Let's go to line four. We have a call on the road. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Farron.
Good morning, guys. How are you this morning?
Great.
Good morning.
You know what? I realize I have vertigo, okay? And I'm just wondering if my vertigo is kind of caused by my eyes or what? Because it's funny. There's times where I can close my left eye if I cover it. And I'll be getting a dizzy spell. And if I cover it, it seems like it, I don't want to say it goes away from pretty much. It doesn't affect me as much as, say, if I leave it open, my sense of balance is off. If I close it, I don't have that problem. Or if I put my glasses on, it seems to help a little bit. Do you think that might be a problem of just improper glasses or what?
Well, just to start from the beginning, of course, for people listening, vertigo is just imbalance. A person feels, is that correct? That's your sensation. Often you feel disoriented.
This isn't just dizzy. It's dizzy. Sometimes I get these spells where it just puts me down. The whole room starts spinning, and I'm going to an ear, nose, and throat specialist mm-hmm. right now, if I can say it.
Right, sure.
And it seems, but for some reason, I cover my left eye, and it seems like it stops. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but...
Well, sometimes, well, a couple quick responses. Frequently, people do come in with this comment. I would say, in general, just as a general response, vertigo usually is not visually based, although obviously vision is a component. More often than not, I think the ear, nose, and throat, often it's an inner ear problem, ear fluid, just something of that nature. That's been my experience. Very seldom is imbalance like that caused from, say, improper glasses or the need for glasses. The only thing you did say that might lend it a little bit, sometimes people will have what we call a vertical imbalance between the two eyes. The two eyes don't align. And so they'll have prism, which bends light, if you will, and balance the eyes out. And that's I mention that because you mentioned it seemed like your glasses seem to help a little bit, although not exclusively. And also, if you have an imbalance between the two eyes and you cover one eye, you're not going to have the imbalance because the two eyes are not fighting each other. So that would be, I guess, my general response. Probably not. You're on the right path. I think the physician you're dealing with, that would be a good question, is if that person might think an eye or an ocular evaluation might be in order. But generally, it's probably not visually based.
Well, thank you very much. You guys have a good day.
All right, you too. Thanks for the call. Our guest this morning on the second hour of Focus is Dr. James Farron, an optometrist at Carl Clinic. If you have an eye question, give us a call at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let's go to line number one and another call from the car. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Farron.
Good morning. Hi.
Good morning.
My question is this. I'm in my early 40s. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Year before that, I had to start wearing my first pair of glasses. And I'm curious as to whether or not you think I can continue seeing an optometrist. Do I need to move to an ophthalmologist? I know that my vision seems to be changing after years of, you know, just being 20/20. So I'm curious as to eye care for a new diabetic. And I'll hang up and listen.
Sure, it's a good question, and that too, Les, it might be good to spend a moment. There's some confusion. We call it the three O's in eye care, the different specialties. First of all, to answer a question, generally, I think her problem with change in vision has to do with her age rather than her diabetes. Diabetes type 2, usually age-related or environmental, as opposed to type 1, where often it is truly genetic problem. Her situation is needing glasses is not due to diabetes, generally speaking. In eye care, there are three specialties to answer a question: ophthalmology, optometry, and opticianry. Opticianry basically is on-the-job type of training. That's the individual you would meet at the lens glasses store, where you take your prescription and that person would fit you with glasses based on the either ophthalmologist or optometrist's prescription. The difference between an ophthalmologist and an optometrist is the ophthalmologist, along with doing eye care, general eye care, does surgery. So really that's what their main focus is. Both obviously, and they're well-skilled in treating eye diseases also. Optometry does not do eye surgery but is well-trained in treating eye diseases and, of course, where appropriate, would make the referral to the ophthalmologist. An optometrist would be well-qualified to treat monitor a diabetic, and unless that diabetic needed some specialized treatment, sometimes if diabetes can cause, say, change in the retina, hemorrhaging, things like that, that would merit a referral, and not only to just a general ophthalmologist, but to a retina specialist, a retinologist, which is a subspecialty of ophthalmology. Mm-hmm. So I think you'd be well served at this point. People are always and should, if they want a second opinion on their care or another thought, it's not a bad idea to have another appointment. But I think the doctor who, if they've given you good service and you have confidence in them, I'm sure would be in a position to monitor your condition.
All right. Very good. Let's go to line two. We have a call from Champaign. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Farron.
Hi. I'm wondering if you can tell me, for those of us that were fortunate enough never to have to wear glasses until we got to, you know, our 40s and are still frustrated with pulling reading glasses on and off or even wearing a bifocal lens, is there anything new in bifocal contacts or anything else? You know, I've even tried the one contact thing, and that didn't work so well. Is there anything new?
Is it frustrating? Do you have a distance correction, or you just can't see
no.
up close?
No distance at all.
Okay, you have. Yeah, you know, to some, really, the reality is the path of least resistance, and probably the easiest thing for someone like yourself is just a pair of glasses, reading glasses, to put on when you need them. In terms of when we'll talk about a procedure too that can be done in the eye that might give you some help too. But monovision is, you know, where in your case you'd wear a contact for reading in one eye. Sometimes people find that disruptive. What monovision is a person will wear a contact in one eye for distance and reading in the other. Although it sounds bizarre for many people, it works quite well. Actually, my host this morning, we were talking about, he's a monovision.
I have that myself. Yeah.
So it can't be all bad. But that's the other option sometimes is putting a bifocal contact in that. So you have some level of distance in the reading eye, too, along with the good distance in the other eye. But beyond that, there's really not a lot new. There is a sort of like, I guess I would want to not call it a laser procedure, where you it essentially called conductive keratoplasty, CK. Sometimes you'll hear ads on the local radio with some specialists doing this, where they'll use a thermal burn procedure, basically altering the shape of the eye. Now, it's not LASIK, where that'll give you the effect of reading in one eye. It's not a permanent procedure. I've always been a little skeptical personally of it. But other than that, it is just that flexibility change with age, and there's not a perfect solution.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Our lines are open right now, so if you have a question for Dr. Farron about eye care, you can get right in. Our numbers are 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let's take a moment then, and let's talk about that monovision thing and maybe a little bit about LASIK surgery. I have that. I have one contact for reading and one contact lens for distance vision. And I have to say, when my optometrist first suggested that, I went, "You're nutty." Because I had moved in and I was in the bifocal phase. Yes, I said, "Well, how do I do this with contacts?"
Right.
And he said, "Well, look, why don't you give that a try?" And so I did. And there was an adjustment period, as I recall, where things at a certain distance seemed a little fuzzy, I guess maybe is the correct term. But after a while, I adjusted, and it works great for me.
And then again, with the monovision too, you can tweak it a little bit too. Sometimes if you're doing a lot of distance, I don't know if he suggested to you or she suggested to you where you can wear two distance contacts.
No.
People have a three contact series.
Oh, really?
If you were a tennis player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, monovision's really not a great way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can also put a pair of glasses over the monovision to balance out the vision with correcting. But anyway, monovision is if you say, what is the easiest thing as you get into your 40s, probably if you want your best, most convenient vision, the reality is it's glasses.
Mm-hmm.
But if a person's willing to accept a little bit of compromise and maybe a touch of inconvenience, contacts can work. And monovision is one of three ways that can correct presbyopia. That's what we call it, the loss of close vision after age 40. Most people can adapt to it. It has its limitations. If a person does a lot of where you wear a correction in one eye, as Les mentioned, usually the dominant eye for distance and the other eye for reading. If you have an occupation that is really very close focused, you do a lot of computer work, it may not be ideal. Doing a lot of driving, same thing. But with a general occupation, it often will work. The other options, of course, would be to wear contacts for distance like you did. And then when you pick up the newspaper or your desk work, you put reading glasses on. But again, it often is frustrating for people who were wearing contacts because they didn't want glasses. And a new, I would say, development is starting to really make improvements. And the bifocal contacts have been around for, you know, forever. But they are improving. They're still not perfect, but a lot of people are finding bifocal contacts might be better than monovision, because with a bifocal contact, of course, you have near distance vision and distance vision in both eyes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. He had suggested the bifocal contact, too, mm-hmm. at the time.
When the earlier lady was calling, one distance contact in one eye, and you can tweak the system to put a bifocal in the other eye. So you have reading and distance. I mean, it's still mm-hmm. not perfect, mm-hmm. but the reality is with bifocals, it still does. Bifocal contacts often will alter your far vision just slightly.
Yeah, with the monovision, I have to be careful to make sure I get the right one in the right eye and the left one in the left eye. Let's go to the phone lines. We have a full bank of calls right now. Line one, White Heath. You're on the air with Dr. Farron. Good morning.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm wondering what the difference between LASIK surgery and cataract surgery is.
Dramatic difference, although in some ways both result in improved vision. Cataract is a clouding of the lens of the eye,
uh-huh.
the lens of the eye, inside the eye, and it's in most cases age-related, usually after, I would say, 60, probably after 70. A person, and everybody develops cataracts. The,
uh-huh.
the lens in the eye becomes cloudy. When it becomes difficult to see to the point where a person can no longer function, they'll have cataract surgery where the lens inside the eye is removed
uh-huh.
and an artificial or an intraocular implant lens is put in its place. So that's cataracts,
uh-huh.
and it is a medical condition driven by age almost universally, although some health conditions, diabetes sometimes can cause premature cataracts. But it would be unlikely generally that, a 50-year-old, except in rare cases, would have a cataract. A 75-year-old would be very likely to have a cataract.
Uh-huh.
Now, LASIK is a whole different thing. That is generally where a nearsighted individual who cannot see far away
uh-huh.
wants to be freed of glasses or contacts. And in this procedure, a laser is used. It modifies not the lens inside the eye, but it modifies the front surface of the eye, the cornea, in essence flattening it slightly and reducing the nearsightedness to the extent where a person now is free of glasses because they can see, or contacts because they can see far away.
Oh, okay.
So, go ahead.
My husband just had cataract surgery. Mm-hmm. He can see really well now. And so I was... and I knew they replaced the lenses, and so mm-hmm. that wouldn't work then for just being nearsighted or something. Replacing the lens isn't going to really help. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean,
if you could just, instead of doing LASIK, just replace the lenses.
Well, yes, it can. I don't want to muddle the field totally, but just a quick answer to that. LASIK has very broad, and it's LASIK, LASIK. And there's also another procedure called LASIK, LASIK, and a few others that we could spend the whole program on this. But anyway, back to your point, it has very broad application, but you can have an implantable lens put in your eye, too, in place of LASIK. We have had, I've had patients who have not qualified for LASIK because they can't modify the cornea, flatten it enough, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And so instead of doing that, they insert a lens inside the eye.
I see.
They don't take the other lens out.
I see. Okay.
They can put it in, and now you have the same effect. Say if you're highly nearsighted,
uh-huh.
You put the comparable neutralizing lens inside the eye and create good far vision.
I see.
And that's sort of actually, in a way, different, but the same general concept, what happened with your husband in cataract surgery.
Uh-huh.
In this implantable contact, generally they're not taking the lens out of the eye. Whereas in his, they have. I mean, I feel
like... They took the lenses out of his eyes.
Exactly, yeah. I don't want to...
Put new lenses in.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I mean, I was just thinking it would save one one step.
Well, that, you know, it's done, but again, it's a little bit more of an invasive procedure, this implantable contact.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, in your husband's case, that was a medical problem. Eliminating glasses or contacts to see better, I mean, you're basically altering a healthy eye. So that's, you can never lose, so to speak, sight of that fact.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's true. Okay, well, I just wanted that clarified.
Okay, hopefully
Thanks.
That makes,
yes,
at least
does.
Clears
yeah.
the field a little bit.
It does.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call. Let's go to line four. We have a caller from Bourbonnais. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Farron.
Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
I have a question about a drifting eye. I am 84 years old, and I have type 2 diabetes. My wife tells me that my right eye drifts. Now, I'm not aware of it or conscious of it, but she said it goes off into right field sometimes. And I don't know what causes it. What can you do about it at my age?
Well, have you had regular eye care?
Well, I have...
When's your last eye exam? I guess that's a question.
About 2 years ago.
And what did the doctor say? Did he notice anything?
Well, I didn't have it at that time.
Okay.
Seems to be something that just developed within the last maybe 6 months.
Well, generally, a drifting eye means the eye, I assume the eye is turning out. Is that what she's noticing?
Yeah, turning out, yeah.
Okay. Generally, if your eye turned out, it means your two eyes are not working together and you would notice something. And often, if it turns out they're not coordinating, you'd probably see double.
Now, that I don't see.
That's what I'm saying. I haven't heard you say that, so
no, I
guess
haven't.
I'm having...
I'm not even aware of it until she tells me, uh-oh,
well,
there goes your eye, you know.
I'm not telling you to question your wife's
judgment. I'm sure she's right.
But I guess I would say if that's the case, probably your best bet, if it's been a couple years, to... have an eye evaluation and see what your eye specialist has to say about this condition. That's what you can do about it, in my opinion.
Yeah, all right. What's the corrective action, if any, when somebody has this?
Well, it depends on it. That's what I mean to say. I would hesitate to make a diagnosis. Get an eye exam and see what that person who's seeing you up close and personal has to say.
All right.
All right.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks
You're
a lot for the call. Let's go to line three. We have a caller from Peoria. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Farron.
Good morning. I have two conditions of the eye. I am 82 years old. I have dry eyes, and I have blepharitis. And the doctor has said that I should soak my eyes for initially at three times a day for about 15 minutes in hot water, and then put baby oil on the lids with a cotton Q-tip. I was wondering, is there any other, how long does this go on, or how can I lessen the time that I, the times that I do this washing?
Well, you mentioned two things, and they often go hand in hand. Of course, dry eye means the, and it often accompanies, I think you mentioned you were in your 80s?
Yes.
You say that? Yeah. So it often accompanies age, so you know, it's probably small consolation, but dry eye is a very common problem. Blepharitis is a oiliness and irritation of the eyelid, and often accelerates the dryness of the eye. So what your eye specialist was counseling you on is try to control the blepharitis and often help the dry eye.
So one helps the other.
Yes, very much so. What you can do, warm compresses, and I would assume you mentioned that. Probably the easiest way to do that is get a washcloth, moisten it, and put it in a microwave. Trying to heat up a cloth under running water almost never works, so that would be the first thing I'd say. And, you know, three times a day, that's great. That's probably a little aggressive, and the reality is most people are not going to do it that often. But doing it as much as you can... And then there also is a product called a lid scrub, sort of like a medicated pad. Then after you've done the warm compress cycle a couple times in each eye, getting one of these lid scrub pads and just wiping the eyelid. And I cannot understate the importance of lubricating your eye with dry eye type drops. There's a variety of products you'd see over the counter. Sustain is one. Theratears is another one that quickly comes to mind.
What's the first one?
Sustain, S Y S T T-A-N-E.
Okay.
And most of these drops are over the counter.
All right.
And using it consistently two or three times a day would really help, because what you're doing is putting more lubrication on the surface of the eye and flushing away excess debris.
Oh, and that blepharitis is the debris.
Well, it creates sort of debris, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's like dandruff of the eyelids?
In a manner of speaking, yeah. Your eyelids are producing too much secretion. That oiliness translates onto the eye itself, creating a drying effect.
I see. Okay. Well,
that's how one accelerates the other.
Yeah.
And, you know, blepharitis, chronic blepharitis, is not an uncommon thing, but it's really controllable. I don't know if you'd ever eliminate it, but I think if you know, are religious about doing these compresses at least once or twice a day, maybe,
yeah.
Or as often as you are motivated,
uh-huh.
and lubricating the eyes.
Is this a lifetime thing that I must do?
Well, probably it's driven a little bit by your age. I think as we age, our tissue just dries out in general. So I think the fact that you're in your 80s, you know, that's how it is. So you're not unusual in that case.
Okay. Well, what about applying these little soap?
Medicated pads?
Using the I use baby soap.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's doing the same thing I mentioned. It's probably a little more convenient to get these medicated pads and just wipe the lid rather than trying to use a Q-tip perhaps and shampoo and trying to rub your lids and often poking yourself in the eye.
Yeah, right. I've done that.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned it.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye. Thanks a lot for your call this morning. It's 11:33. You're listening to Focus 580. Good morning. My name is Les Schulte. I'm filling in for David Inge this morning. And our guest in the second hour of Focus is Dr. James Farron. Dr. Farron is an optometrist at Carl Clinic here in Urbana. And if you have an eye care question that you would like to ask Dr. Farron, give us a call. Our lines are open right now. Our local number is in the 217 area code is 333-9455. And if you're outside of the 217 code, give us a call toll-free at 800-222-9455. I would like to maybe just go, while we have a moment, go back to the LASIK topic.
Okay. And I want you to touch on dry eyes. There's a couple of things I want to
do. Oh, okay. Well, maybe we ought to do – maybe let's do that first since
we'll follow
up on this question.
Topic of dry eyes, yeah. A couple other things the people sometimes do with mixed success, there's a concept called punctal plugs. The concept being if your eye is not producing enough moisture, there are these little sort of like the head of a toothpick you could put in. There's a little on the inside of the lower eyelid, a little hole called a puncta where you plug it up and keep more fluid in contact with the eye. Occasionally it works. It's had mixed success. I just mentioned that to make our discussion complete. Recently, with the lubrication, to me, what we were discussing with the lady about the lubrication and the ministering to the eyelids, worth consideration. But also, there have been some research indicating that supplements, omega-3 fish oil and flaxseed oil supplements, capsules can sometimes help dry eye conditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, my wife has a dry eye condition, mm-hmm. and actually she's had the little plug things mm-hmm. done. And
her response has been
yes, good. Actually, her response to that was pretty good. That was one of the topics. She said, oh, make sure you ask him about dry eye.
No, it has
eye.
A potential, and in some cases, actually, it goes the other way, too, because the plug tends to, it was not the perfect solution when it first came out. You plug up the fluid, and then the eye is not being flushed, so you almost have the, if you will, stale tear film just staying in contact with the eye.
She had a little problem with, I think, the plug coming out.
Yes, and that's been an issue, too, coming out and irritating the lid, too, or the puncta.
Okay. We have a call on the toll-free line from Georgetown. Let's go to line 4. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Farron.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My husband has a form of macular degeneration called adult vitelliform dystrophy. Is there anything that can be helped with that disease?
Has he been seeing a retinal specialist?
Yes, he did.
And what did the retinal specialist say?
Well, that he had adult vitelliform.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of treatment did he give him, if any?
Nothing.
Okay, felt like that was the best, that was the way it was. Is that correct? I mean,
yes.
Okay. That's been my experience. You know, the retinal specialist is the, and you have to trust that person's opinion. That's retinal deterioration, and there's it's a tough condition because probably macular, various forms of macular degeneration in people, particularly aging people, is one of the leading causes of visual loss in our population.
Yes, well, we just, this was about a couple of years ago, and we just wondered if there was any new advancement in that, if there was any treatment.
Not that I'm aware of. So it's been a couple of years since you've seen your retinal specialist?
Well, no, well, that one, but he has been to an optometrist
mm-hmm.
since.
And what did that doctor say?
Well, nothing can be done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Again, and, you know, it may be worth just rechecking with your retinologist, too, but I think you are probably at a standstill with that condition. Because there really is no way to replace a damaged retina, and that's essentially what is occurring.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right. Thanks for your call.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. On the LASIK surgery topic again, mm-hmm. Is there an optimum age when that can be or should be done?
Well, again, bringing our presbyopic, I mean, probably the ideal procedure is after 25, I would say, because the vision is stable. You, of course, wouldn't want to do a procedure on a changing eye.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not,
right. You don't want to have it changing again after you have the surgery.
To know,
sure.
Yeah. So usually by 25. So really one of the requirements at most places, they'll say at least 21 and 2 years of stability. So there's that age issue. Probably the ideal person's around 30. Is there a real cutoff? I would say as you get into your late 50s, 60s, I would say the potential for benefit is reduced. And also as you get a little bit older, there are other eye conditions that start to develop too that can make the whole situation more muddled.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the optimal person is probably under 40 because after 40, LASIK is primarily applied to the near side. You can't see far away individuals. So if you're 45, your eyes are going to be corrected for distance, but you still will need often reading glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was because I had actually talked about that with my optometrist,
uh-huh.
Just sort of the subject in general, mm-hmm. because I was thinking about, well,
right.
maybe this is something I should consider myself. And at the time, he had said, well, you know, probably the correction that we would be able to make would be for the distance mm-hmm. vision, and then you would have to wear reading glasses mm-hmm. at your age, so to speak. And then I was reading this article about the monovision. I thought, well, maybe there has been advances in LASIK surgery since I had talked to him a few years ago.
Yeah, well, I would say the advances have been, the procedure has been streamlined and improved, but you still can't do both. The technique that sometimes is used is sort of like creating a LASIK monovision effect, where, say, if you have a nearsighted individual like yourself, you will correct the dominant eye to the optimal length and leave the other eye slightly undercorrected with a little nearsightedness, which will give you the ability to compensate up close. But you can't do both near and far with that procedure to an eye.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, create a bifocal effect.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Our phone lines are 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. If you have a question that you would like to ask Dr. Farron about eye care, it's 1140. We have about 15 minutes left in the program with Dr. Farron. So if you do, please give us a call. It seems like there have been a lot of advances in eye care and eye surgery in the last few years. Anything else new in that regard?
Well, relative to LASIK, it's been improved. They have, you know, just maybe we could back up and just mm-hmm. quickly just touch on what is LASIK.
Sure.
And what it is, the procedure is, and it's been, or forms of it have been around, golly, since Just as a, if I might add a short story, I always thought this was an interesting where it sort of came into place. Basically, if you understand the concept, is you're flattening or changing the shape of the front surface of the eye, the cornea. And it became just sort of observational that particularly during World War II, when some of the pilots got shards of glass, if you will, from their airplanes in their eye, and some nearsighted individuals often improved. And the observation is made somehow by altering the shape of the eye, you can improve the vision.
Hmm.
So that's really? When the first ideas was the genesis of that idea. And then there was a Japanese physician in the 50s who picked it up and really started actually making cuts on the cornea to flatten it. That's how you do it, which became a procedure called radial keratotomy, which was not a successful procedure. But it was a disaster in his case because he made his cuts too deep and literally blinded those people. So that whole concept fell off the planet, if you will. And then in the 60s, a Soviet physician picked it up and refined it where he learned how to make the proper depth of cut. And so by making several and up to sometimes as many as 16 cuts on the surface of the eye, you flatten the eyeball and you reduce the myopia. Mixed results, very much of variation between surgeons. So that really didn't take hold. Then LASIK probably came into the medical field, maybe a dozen years ago. What LASIK is, and it's been a very successful procedure. Up till then, it really was, I would say, not a consistently successful procedure. LASIK, what you do is you flatten the eyeball. LASIK, you make a very fine cut on the cornea. The cornea has several layers. You peel with this cut, almost like cutting meat, if you will. You peel back several layers, then that eyeball is scanned with a laser, and a prescribed amount of corneal tissue is removed with this laser based on the person's nearsightedness. The more you take off, the more myopia is reduced. And so that is how you flatten the eyeball, you reduce the corneal thickness, and consequently reduce the nearsightedness. And then that flap is put back in position, and that is LASIK.
Hmm.
And it takes about 10 minutes per eye. They do both eyes simultaneously. And in the hands of a skilled surgeon, it generally has very good results.
Wow, interesting. I didn't know that. I actually didn't know how it was done. Interesting. Let's go back to the phone lines. On line one, we have a caller from Champaign. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Farron.
Thank you. I have macular degeneration, and I am 85 years old. I have had the cold laser treatment for the eye that had wet macular degeneration, and that has stopped any further progress in that eye. Now, the other one had dry macular degeneration, and I began to take a specific vitamin formula for macular, it's called macular support.
Mm-hmm. A variety of those.
And I had investigated a number of different formulas for claiming to do the same thing to help or arrest macular degeneration progress. Anyway, now for a year and a half at least, the dry macular degeneration has not worsened at all. I mean, it seems to be have been arrested, which, of course, I'm very happy about, but I wondered what you might have to say. Now, this formula is a formula that was put together by an internist, a doctor, and I have taken his multiple vitamins for many years and continue to do that. So I'm curious to see if you have any comment.
Relative to, say, a nutritional supplement?
Yes.
I assume you buy these. You don't have a prescription. You just buy them?
Yes, I just buy them.
Over the counter or through his buying service?
Yes, and but because I haven't had any further development in the wet macular degeneration way, I'm sort of convinced that it's working.
As we sort of touched on this, the whole idea of vitamins is, I think with, well, back up a moment, dry age-related macular ARMD, as often as it's referred to, is probably about the only thing you can do in dry is take a vitamin supplement.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, though, you might look at what's on the package and see, but very often you'll have vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, lutein, zinc. There are a number of these eye vitamins, and often if you look at a supplement, they parallel them. So I think just as a general response, I think in dry, I mean, that's about the only thing you can do, and I think it's a good thing.
Yes, there are about eight different compounds in this formula, and there is no vitamin C, for instance. There is some vitamin A.
Mm-hmm.
But there's zinc and there's
lutein
and ZX and thin.
Now some of those, anyway, you know, that's the general thing. I think it's a good thing. Just to explain to people, dry is really is the tissue is deteriorating, but there's no fluid leakage. Wet is where you have fluid leakage in the back of the eye. And as you mentioned with your laser treatment, often laser is not curing it, but it's if you will, slowing the any fluid leakage by cutting off, cauterizing, I guess, if you will, in a general way of describing it, that fluid leakage. Of course, wet is much less percentage-wise. I think it's less than 10% of all macular degeneration, so that that procedure does not have wide application for many people. I don't know if your doctor mentioned, too, the newest development is these injections.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
For wet. Lucentis is one specific, seems to be, where these injections into the eye on a monthly basis seem to slow down any leakage or these blood vessels that are developing and damaging the retina. So that's an update on that laser treatment.
Mm-hmm. I had the laser treatment before those came out, and haven't had any further development on that eye at all.
And I assume you're probably having your eye monitored at least once every, what does your doctor have you come back? And
well, usually it's every 6 months.
Yes, I would say that's reasonably. And then, of course, there is a, I don't know if they gave you that little grid pattern.
Oh, yes.
That you can check on daily where you can monitor yourself a little bit. And if you see any change in the grid, when you look at it up close, you, of course, call your doctor and have him look at it.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. It's 11:50. We have about 5 or 6 minutes left with Dr. Farron. If you'd like to get a quick question in, the number is 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let's go to line 3. We have a caller from Urbana. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Farron.
Hi. Would you repeat the business about dry eyes? Are the techniques that you recommended for an earlier caller what most people should do who have dry eyes? I don't particularly, but I have two relatives who have dry eye problems, and one of them discovered that her eyes got wind-burned easily. She's now bought some sunglasses to wear over her regular glasses to help protect her eyes from drying from wind. So that's one quick question. The second quick question is, what sorts of things should people at younger ages be doing to protect their eye health? Things like wearing glasses that have that change to sunglasses, for instance, does that help? Does wearing sunglasses when you're outside most of the time help this kind of thing? Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I think for most people with dry eyes, probably lubricating the eyes 3 to 4 times a day or as needed is probably the easiest, and for most people, the benefit most with least effort. And usually it'll resolve their, or at least control their condition. And the lady mentioned about having, obviously, if you have a barrier in front of your eye from wind and dust, it's going to offer some protection. Just even a pair of glasses is going to screen the potentially harmful ultraviolet radiation from the eye itself. But sunglasses are good, and I don't think it's a bad thing. Probably a lot of times, just in general, a bill on a cap often will do and when you're outside in intense sun.
Mm-hmm. The sun itself is just
a glare.
A glare just has, and I don't want to say a harmful effect, but it has a wearing effect, I guess, on the eye, right?
I think that would be good. But, you know, the reality is an ophthalmic quality pair of glasses, say if you have a correction and that you wear glasses, that's going to screen most of the harmful UV that would potentially damage the eye.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Thanks for the call. It's 11:52. Let's go to line 4, and we have a call from Sullivan. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Farron.
Yeah, I've had a couple strokes and hot air, and the doctor recommended I take aspirin. And I noticed on my left eye, 10 o'clock position, like there's a spot, and I don't know if that's been a rupture of blood vessel or water. You know, should the person continue that or what have you? Thank you, and bye.
All right, thanks.
Well, that's, again, a question that there are certain things I can help, but I think just as a general comment, the spot he left us, but is the spot moving? Because sometimes it can be what we call a floater, just debris floating in the eye. But if it's a permanent blind spot, if you will, or area of the vision that is voided, perhaps he's had you can get a partial stroke's not, but in a sector of the eye where you maybe have an occlusion of one of the blood vessels and you lose some of that. I mean, obviously what the man needs to do is get to his eye care specialist and have them look at it and tell him what the problem is. Aspirin, that's a general physician's a question that your general physician would answer. I think a lot of people take aspirin, or at least the baby aspirin is 72 milligrams. With people who've had strokes, obviously, aspirin has a blood thinning effect, so you're less likely to get a clot, which can result in a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But again, best answered by your specialist.
Yeah. We sort of touched on this earlier, but is during the summer, is there any, in the hot weather, any particular things we should be doing to help protect our eyes? Or anything different than any other time of the year, maybe?
I would say not anymore, obviously. Yeah. Going outside, again, shielding your eyes, sunglasses are not bad. I think people sometimes are more prone to allergies or itching in the eye. There's certain drops sometimes in a minimal manner you can take that are antihistamine, decongestant, the Visine type products. They just made a pretty good over-the-counter drop, became over-the-counter called Zaditor, which is an allergy drop. Was a very prominently used one. But beyond that, just seasonally, it's just when it's hot, it's hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We just have a couple of minutes left. Is there anything else that you'd like to touch on here before we close out?
We talked about, a lot of times it's come up, the last gentleman had called about spots. Sometimes people can get excited about spots. As the eye produces, the inside of the eye is filled with a fluid called vitreous. I guess I was talking about the spots, particularly if they're movable. And as new tissues form, these basically cells are fluffed off, and often you'll see, particularly in contrast bright background light, or if you're reading against a real white page, these little amorphous sort of translucent things moving around. Those are floaters, and in most cases they're benign. So probably not a super worry, but if you notice a sudden increase and maybe any flashing light, that can sometimes indicate possibly a change in the retina or a tear in the retina. And then, of course, you'd want to become more alarmed. Mm-hmm. So it's worth mentioning that. One of the interesting things, totally shifting gears, relative to contact lenses, There are, in the last couple of years, been introduced an improved version. The vast majority of people who wear contacts today wear soft lenses. They're more comfortable, a little more adapted to, a little easier to use, and particularly if you're replacing them periodically. But there's been an update in the material with a silicone-based soft lens that seems to give people much more oxygen to the eye. And I've definitely, and people we work with, I've been trying to switch them over to some of these brands with an updated oxygen content, these silicone-based lenses.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be something you'd ask your eye specialist about if you're wearing contacts, if you have that lens, and would it be worth shifting to that lens?
Sure. Great. Dr. Farron, thank you very much.
Let's truly enjoyed the opportunity to speak to you.
Yeah, it's been fun. Our guest this hour on Focus 580 has been Dr. James Farron, optometrist with Carl Clinic.